We welcome you back into another edition of Chicago's Legal Latte. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Mitchell. And of course, we get together on a regular basis to talk about different legal matters with the folks from Lavelle Law. And today, I'm very pleased to welcome a new attorney at the firm to our podcast for the first time, Sarah Ruche. Sarah joins us today to talk about a new group that's starting at Lavelle Law in dealership law. So, Sarah, really looking forward to this conversation. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jim. Happy to be here and talk about our dealership practice group.
Yeah, so we use that term dealership. A lot of things come to mind. What's really encompassed? What sort of business entities fall under that category?
Yeah, that's a good question. And kind of my elevator pitch I like to tell people is, you know, of course, you think of a motor vehicle dealership mm-hmm. or an auto dealership as the first that comes to mind. And that is certainly the case. But aside from motor vehicle dealerships, we're also talking about small equipment dealers, agricultural equipment dealers, really kind of encompassing any type of entity that sells and usually services some form of equipment from a manufacturer.
And I think we want to focus on a lot of the aspects of dealership, but I think one thing that sort of jumps out is there a difference between a distinction between dealership and franchise? Are those different things or are they the same?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, my answer to that is you can think about it as not all dealerships are, or all dealerships are franchises, but okay. Not all franchises are dealerships.
Okay.
Right. So when you look at technically the aspects of the definitions in the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act, that's what it's called. So okay. You have franchise in the, you know, name of the act, and the definition of franchise in there does include a motor vehicle dealership. So the dealership is actually defined as a franchise, but there are certainly other franchises that are not dealerships, if that makes sense.
Sure. Now you mentioned, of course, the state of Illinois, and that's where I always like to focus. What are some of the unique laws or statutes that exist in Illinois that govern dealerships that you focus on?
Yeah, the big one is, as I mentioned, the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act. And that's going to be the law that you look to when describing and analyzing and dealing with the manufacturer. That's governing the relationship between the dealership and the manufacturer. But then we have other types of dealership laws that go toward consumer protections as well, and laws that apply to dealerships that are not motor vehicle dealerships. So there you have one specifically that comes to mind would be the Illinois Equipment Fair Dealership Law, for example, where, like I mentioned before, there are different dealerships outside of motor vehicles. We specifically have an equipment dealership law in Illinois.
Okay. I want to talk today about some of the different things that you do in your role at Lavelle Law to work with dealers and dealerships. I guess we'll start at the beginning. Are you involved in helping these companies form and become a business entity? And what do they have to go through to become what we would call a dealership?
Yeah, at Lavelle, we have a really robust business practice group. So from there, we have the ability to help entities form from the beginning. But typically what we'll see is already an established business that is looking to maybe negotiate their franchise agreement or buy or sell a dealership that we can definitely help with as well. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, well, I'm going to follow up because I wanted to talk about buying and selling dealerships. When you mentioned automotive and certainly in Illinois, you know, our dealerships are frequently owned by large entities who have all the different brands. How involved do you get when they are buying or selling or starting a dealership? I'm sure there's a lot of complexities in those.
Yeah, there certainly is. And again, we lean on our mergers and acquisition experience and experience at drafting agreements with our business practice group as well. So our dealership team works in conjunction with our business team, of course. We also have tax experts here at Lavelle Law that can answer any questions related to those implications. But specifically when looking at dealership buy-sells, it's important that dealers have an attorney that understand the industry because mm-hmm. manufacturers require specific documentation of ownership structure, and dealers need to submit and receive approval from the manufacturer before they just go ahead and sell, right? Because they are a franchise business, they're sort of at the mercy of the manufacturer's approval. There are right of first refusal implications that come into play, And there are really specific provisions in each franchise agreement that, as attorneys, we need to carefully consider to make sure the approval is received for the dealer on that buy sell from the first initial notice. And so, where we come in usually to help with that, aside from just simply submitting notice for that approval, would be working through any issues with the documentation that might arise. You mentioned that a lot of dealerships have sort of similar names or might seem like they're owned by all the same family. And that's certainly the case. There's a lot of succession planning that goes on when working with dealerships. And sometimes dealers forget to update their records. Well, suddenly if they want to sell or buy, great grandfather is on the ownership list and he is no longer with us. So that's even just a simple element of the buy sell process that if the ownership structure is not updated, for example, the manufacturer's not going to approve. There's a lot of approval processes I could get further into also.
Well, is there room, much room for negotiation? I would assume that in most instances, the manufacturer sort of has the upper hand. They have, before they're going to give their name and their product, they're going to have certain things. But how many different things can you get into when you're representing the dealer?
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. The motor manufacturers are going to really be looking at how effective is this dealer going to be. And there truly is a sales effectiveness rating, right? And so the manufacturer wants to know that this new dealer coming in to buy this dealership is going to perform probably at least as good as the last one. And to demonstrate that, we can try and do what we can, right, to negotiate, but at least put forward arguments that the dealer is performing effectively. So there, you can pull in experts. We can involve a broker to help facilitate the sale. There are brokers of dealerships that we work with. And we can do what we can to demonstrate to the manufacturers through letters and other correspondence that, maybe despite this lower sales effectiveness number, these are all of the reasons why this dealer will perform well in this area. Right. So if it's an already established dealer who maybe was in a very rural location, that could be a good explanation for why their performance numbers are quite different than where they might be now in the Chicago suburbs or, in the loop in an urban environment where their ratings will be higher. We can craft those types of arguments that some dealers might not think an attorney could be useful for, but really that could push it to the finish line when we get down to it.
We're talking with Sarah Ruscha today, an attorney at Lavelle Law, the newest attorney at the firm, and she's sharing a great deal of information about the newest practice group, dealership law at Lavelle Law. And we'll give you some information on where to contact Sarah before we let her go today, but getting a lot of great information. We talked about the business side of it, the entity, but you mentioned earlier that there's a consumer side as well, things that the dealer has to deal with their particular end users. Tell me about some of the things that you need to be involved with there to help the dealer function once they're up and running.
Sure. Yeah, great question. So, we're talking post buy sell maybe, or we're just coming in to help a dealer operate their business effectively. One pretty simple thing that we can help dealers with that sometimes doesn't come to the top of their mind, and I'll get to the consumers, but I also wanted to mention another relationship with the manufacturer that we can help while they're operating is increase in their warranty reimbursement labor rates. So dealers have the opportunity to request an increase in the amount they receive from the manufacturer for warranty work done. And typically we can help negotiate a higher hourly rate that the dealer will be paid from the manufacturer for that labor time that their service technicians are putting forth to have a consumer walk out of a dealership with warranty work done for free. So that just kind of brought to my mind a little bit of a consumer, but also operational, right, business aspect. Beyond that, there are a lot of consumer protection laws in Illinois and several states. I'm also licensed in Wisconsin, and they're just as consumer friendly there. So Illinois, for example, has a new Vehicle Buyer Protection Act. We have a Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act. We've also got a consumer protection code within the administrative code provisions relating to advertisements. So those are three big laws that are pretty consumer heavy that we can help on the dealer side of as well.
And are those things you help craft in advance? Let's say you mentioned advertising or marketing materials. Are those things that a dealer should run through their attorney to make sure they're compliant before they find out down the road that they're not?
Yes, Please, please come to us to look at those. A lot of times dealers are working with vendors to create their advertisements,
Sure.
and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes the vendors are nationwide companies and they don't know the intricacies of the state laws at play, and they don't know how they're enforced and how strict the penalties can be for those types of advertising violations. If any consumers are listening to this, right, you get direct mail advertisements maybe right to your mailbox, or you're seeing certain ads elsewhere. That's something that we can look at before they reach the mailbox and then receive a citation. So yeah, the penalties can be high. We're happy to work in conjunction with those vendors to make sure we're ahead of it before it comes back with a
When
hefty
it
fine.
comes to the dealerships, obviously the as we mentioned, the large automotive groups probably have a pretty good handle on things. But when you talk about some of those agricultural dealers or things where it might be a businessman who sees an opportunity and they sort of get into something new, are there areas in any dealership laws that you would recommend they be aware? I guess the question is, what's the risk? What are the things that they should know operationally that maybe they're not thinking of before they get into the business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, most of my experience and what comes to the top of mind is relating to motor vehicle dealers. I
Okay.
think the biggest risk that they face would be those consumer actions brought against them. So that could happen though in equipment dealers as well, where a sale, happens, and typically it's with a used car, and something goes wrong with the car. Or I can imagine this happening with some sort of agricultural product or a recreational vehicle as well. And suddenly the consumer is upset about the transaction, and the deceptive practices laws really do kind of encompass and allow them to bring claims for misrepresentation, fraud, things of that nature, where there are typically attorney's fees shifting, and now the dealer is faced with a consumer lawsuit driving them by the risk of needing to pay for the consumer's attorney's fees. So that's a big risk. I think another thing I kind of alluded to earlier is the sales effectiveness standards.
Okay.
Manufacturers holding them accountable for reaching 100% sales effectiveness in an environment or area where it's really difficult to achieve that, and that can subject them to termination of their franchise. We're seeing a lot too as far as like hot topics, the Biometric Information Privacy Act. Dealers are still being hit with that. And allegations of discriminatory practices, where there's big, class actions coming out of this dealer increase the financing rates or fees for people of certain socioeconomic status or people of a certain race.
All right, we've got a minute or two left before I let you go. Any corporation in Illinois needs to do an annual report with the Secretary of State, filings of that sort. Anything within dealership law that any sort of annual compliance, either to the state or to the manufacturer that you assist with throughout the life cycle of the business?
That's a good question. Yeah, certainly making sure their entity records are up to date. I think again, when you think about the succession planning that is in a lot of dealerships, really making sure that that ownership structure documentation reflects the accurate ownership. Whenever there is exchange of shares, we need to update those records accordingly, and keeping up to date who the actual general manager of the dealership is, because that matters on a future buy sell as well. Who is in control? And operating dealership.
Well, we've enjoyed the conversation with Sarah Richer today. And Sarah, fascinating topic. Great to see this new practice group, but I know there's a lot more we're going to want to talk about. So I hope to have you back. In the interim, people who may want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get a hold of you to have further conversation?
Yeah, I'd love to talk with anybody about this topic. It's one that you don't hear of every day, but one that certainly there's a need for out there. So, yeah, you can feel free to reach me. My direct line is 847-241-1795, or my email is SREUSCHE@lavellelaw.com.
Excellent. Great conversation. So nice to meet you, Sarah. Thanks for joining us today, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yes, I would love that. Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Look forward to having another conversation on Chicago's Legal Latte soon. Thanks.